Hello.
Hello, hello. Welcome back.
Hello.
A quick thing. We have not been consistent with our posting our podcast. And I think we need to do another apology video.
Oh, there you go.
just because we've been so swamped with projects that it's been kind of hard to record. So
yeah, that's true.
We're grateful for the work that we have. We just haven't found time to do any podcasts, but we did find some time.
Yeah, we are also grateful that nobody seemed to come at us about it, though. So we're apologizing for something that might be not
need an
apology. We
might be apologizing
apology.
To ourselves.
Sure, that's being fair.
Too hard on ourselves. As always, as artists are, you know.
True.
In this episode, we talk to Amy Scott. She is a veteran marketing expert in the Pioneer Valley. She runs, is the owner and director of business development at the award-winning Wild Apple Design Group in Western Mass. And she's fantastic. I always love talking to Amy.
She's just a wonderful human being. Yeah, she's super creative. She's super thoughtful, super mindful when approaching any form of creative and design and strategy. And so we love any time we get the chance to work with her and talk with her, because I think the conversations, I feel like I always come away with a smile and a couple laughs and just like,
I just get that vibe every single time.
I
should have told her in person, but like the way she carries a conversation from one place to another place to like, it's almost like she's doing some marketing in the conversation, weirdly, but like it totally works. It's just like, yeah, it flows so well.
It flows so well.
She's great. She's fantastic. Yeah, we've worked with her a couple times and hopefully working with her some more, maybe this year and maybe into the future.
Yeah. And so, yeah, we talked to her about kind of the sort of blend between the website design branding world and animation and how they come together and where they feel separate at times and just kind of everything in between. And we learned a lot about her organization and how she thinks through things. So
yeah, and there's so much to consider in a website that people don't usually think about.
Yeah.
There's like security, compliance,
well,
database structures.
Not spoiler alert.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, without further ado, let us meet Amy Scott from Wild Apple.
Yeah. Well, Amy, thank you so much for being here. We really, really appreciate your time, especially in the morning. We hope you're doing well. And I wanted to start by saying, you know, for those who don't know in our audience who you are, even though we've known you for years, can you tell us a little bit about who you are and who Wild Apple Design Group is?
Yeah. Yeah. So I started Wild Apple Design Group 24 years ago, if you can believe that.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. And we've been lucky enough to be part of the marketing and graphic design and web building team in Western Mass for all of that time. So we've had offices in Wilbraham and Springfield. Currently we're in Springfield. And so we've always been in this area, which has been a real blessing. So we've been really well supported by both our client community and the rest of the marketing community at large, which is lovely. So I had started Wild Apple Design Group out of necessity. I was a marketing director in the garment industry, but I needed to work from home because I started having children and my kids are really close in age. And so it just kind of became the one thing that I could most easily do from home back then. And a lot of people will ask me about the name Wild Apple Design Group. And the first name that I had chosen for the business was horrifying. And so like, I'll be super vulnerable and just share it here with you. But like, I probably have told you guys this story, but when I very first started working on my own, I think I called it Cost Effective Media Solutions instead of Wild Apple.
Yes.
Like, it's the world's worst name in the history of names. And then I very quickly... I very quickly realized that that was awful. And in short order, I chose Wild Apple because back then people only used Macintosh computers in the graphic design world. And so everything was Apple, Apple. And back then, even using the term Apple was more like slang. It wasn't the brand name, you know, for Apple like we know it now. We would say Mac and Macintosh. Because that was the primary, you know, software and, you know, technical environment that we worked in. That was where Wild Apple came from. So that was and then over time, I added new team members, and we have always operated with a sort of a core team and then subcontractors around us. And again, back in the day when we did that, it was out of necessity. There was a sort of a thing that happened in the like early 2000s where several of the large ad agencies in the Springfield area imploded. You know, they just got top heavy and a few big clients decided to pull things in-house. And so there was a lot of people like us, you know, floating around out there looking for work. And I suddenly grew very quickly because this new initiative by several very large employers to use subcontractors or freelancers, you know, became, you know, really great, a great environment for someone like me who was sort of working by myself with babies in the background and in my basement office sort of thing. So that very quickly became the group aspect of Wild Apple Design Group. So, and through all these years, we've had various sizes. We've had, you know, big sexy offices, and we've also had very small offices, and then we are operating remotely. And then, like many people since the pandemic, we've actually found a little hybrid of the two. So although we have an office, we rarely see the inside of it, and clients are very happy to meet with us digitally and not in person. And everybody, I think, is thankful for that. So,
yeah.
So we've continued to operate successfully that way, even through all that. I would say probably the biggest sea change that we've experienced at Wild Apple since March 2020, we have seen a massive increase in people's digital presence and desire to have highly functional websites that are doing very specific marketing tasks and sales tasks for them, and a great decrease in branding exercises or branding design. So there's definitely, we sort of felt that coming prior to March 2020, but that has, you know, if I were to actually look at the sales numbers, we are helping clients leverage technology to fulfill marketing goals and sales goals far more than we are designing things. And
that's really interesting.
It is. Yeah. So that's kind of what we've been up to. You know, it doesn't mean, you know, one of our reputation in this business has always been that we leverage technology and design expertly. And we've always been kind of design snobs, like we've always been font snobs and color snobs and that sort of thing. But that wasn't as valued, you know, a few years ago all of a sudden. But I am seeing now that we can still merge those two worlds. The clients that come to us still appreciate and respect good design. It's just that their concept of good design is a little different. It's not all about the art. You know, it's definitely more about what it can do for you and how it can serve.
Yeah, that's
that makes perfect sense. I think I've taken a lot away from just your initial conversation here, because I'm hearing that, you know, you were remote before it was cool, so that's fun.
So were we, by the way. I just want to say,
local focus.
We were way before us. But
But you've had this like local focus for a long time, which we really love, and I think there's something about, you know, to be transparent as well, when we started, I think before I came on, the original name of our company was Definity Video. And it, like, as it was like being pitched around, like the name just did not work.
The tongue twister. A lot of people, you can't say it three times fast. No,
you can't. And people were like, is it Divinity or Definity or Define? Like, it just, so that became very apparent, I think, the first like couple of weeks into it.
We can segue into like the marketing mistakes that we marketing people make, you know what I mean? So I think in addition to being having a horrifying original business name, my other favorite one is, for a long time we got really hooked on the word holistic, but we wanted to use it as WHOL and not HOLIS like most people see it. And both are accepted spellings like in English language, but it's very rare that you see holistic spelled with like a WH. And but we kind of got our hooks in it. Like we're going to make it. We're going to really, you know, we're going to sell it. Like this really describes like what we do. We take care of you like holistically, but not in a medicinal way, like in the way that's like your whole marketing universe. So we just kept pushing it, but man, no one was buying it. No one was and we were like, you know, sometimes you just get, you know, which is interesting. I was looking through your list of questions, Katie, that you sent me. And like one of them was like, you know, what are the things that clients get hung up on, you know, and when they are building a brand. And I'm like, hey, I've had a few hangups myself. So I think I understand. Because you get an idea like, you know, Definity, you know, like, oh, everyone's going to love it. Like, no one gets it. Holistic, no one gets it.
Like clients do get attached to some certain things. And I think that's, we talked about that in a couple different episodes. There was an episode where we talked about the North Star. It was Chris Perry, who used to work at Pixar and one of our advisors. He talked about the North Star and like, you know, you're trying to get everyone on the same page with this one thing or, you know, whatever that thing is for you. That's okay. But sometimes we get hooked on something that's temporary, something that's supposed to change. And, you know, sometimes clients will look at that and say, well, why did it look like the thing that was temporary? You know, like, can we go back to that? So that's, it's interesting that you bring that up. Yeah. So you've been talking a little bit about, and I have even a little bit more of a line of questioning in terms of like future technology, but I think we'll get to that. But when you're thinking about like building a brand, or building these sites the way you've talked about them, could you guide us through a little bit of that process of like how you initially get to understand what a client needs?
A little bit of it is definitely how the industry has evolved naturally, which is like back in, you know, so maybe 15 years ago and maybe even 20 years ago when building websites was sort of not required for everyone and was still sort of in its infancy for small businesses anyway. People were very concerned about the container. So the website itself became like a beautiful, hyper-designed frame around very tiny products and very tiny amounts of content. Like, you know? And oftentimes, as you know, that content would not change for a decade, you know, for these businesses. You know, again, I'm sort of thinking from like entrepreneurs or small to medium-sized businesses. But over time, what has happened is it's really the container is really just that. It's just a container. And the content is what becomes the feature. And so whatever it is you sell or pitch or whatever your service is as the business owner, that stuff really takes center stage. And so we've kind of seen the websites like turn inside out. So it's kind of like, you know, again, there's not a lot of design going on in the exterior frame or holder. You know, there's a lot of design going on in the middle. And that stuff in the middle is meant to change a lot, you know, so that affects both the platforms that we create these things in because they need to be able to modify that content a lot. And then it's also just sort of the nature of the beast because with mobile, you know, being really how most websites are being served to people now, the stuff in the middle has to be able to scale appropriately for screen size. Yeah. And so no one really wants the frame, you know, the logo at the top and the menu and the stuff on the sides to hog up all this valuable real estate, you know. So, you know, really like Amazon changed how people felt about, you know, their websites. Apple, you know, their website, you know, really sort of is just a white, even to this day, it's a white canvas with stuff in the middle, really beautiful, beautiful products in the middle. So that's really kind of become finally, you know, the methodology that even small business owners and small service owners will take. And so we're finding also too that the prevalence of being able to use video in an ambient way has really changed things. So it used to be that, you know, big image sliders on homepages of websites were like, you know, very static. They could be really interesting to look at. But again, because of mobile, whatever's in those big sliders has to be scalable. It has to look good, small or large. But now we can serve video in those areas. And we usually do it in an audio-free way. You know, it's usually background video. We slow it down just a little bit so that it doesn't give people, you know, a stroke when they look at it, so that it's moving very slowly. And we found that to be an extremely successful way to give customers a quick peek inside the window of your business. So if you're a restaurant, you know, and your, you know, food is going by and a drink is being poured slowly and, you know, the wait staff is happily smiling at you, like you've just given people about 15 seconds of like a real good feeling with no words, no sound, no sense of action. And we've served it before they've even chosen to look at it. You know, it comes up on the homepage in this background way. And then we sort of want to lead them from that moment into what their next most logical behavior would be based on whatever the business is. So we're finding that those conversations look a little bit like that. And that can be troublesome for small business owners who don't invest a lot in photography or video or elements, like content elements. So a big part of our process is to help people with that. So we might, we have a team of folks that we will refer or work with, or sometimes we will also just move those services through Wild Apple. That's been like the case with us three on this call right now, that we find ways to work with each other so that the visuals and the content and the purpose of whatever the business goal is, is illustrated in some way. But that rendering, to put like a big fat word on it, I would say like rendering is like really the part that like is really becomes necessary to help clients with. And they could hire us to build a website, but if we don't have any real visuals to wrap it around, then it's not much of a job for us. And so we really have to help guide clients into that. And even though we don't directly always provide it, we just create the space for it.
Do you find that some clients are more visual than some, like, than words? Like, I feel like some of our clients are word heavy. They're writers. Mm-hmm. They're folks who really understand, like the
researchers,
like that. And sometimes they get hung up on words on a page and forget that we're making a video in the end, and you're not going to necessarily see words. Do you find that that's kind of a similar thing with some of your clients? Like, do they get hung up on visuals and not like, oh, we actually need to put some words here?
Most of the time when I encounter that, it's because we'll meet someone who's interested in a new website and they didn't do the first site with us, and they'll say, it's so wordy. Like, people are always complaining that my website's too wordy. And so at that point, they've been handed, their marching orders from their own clientele or their own customer base. And we have to help them pare that down and make that more interesting. So a few things that we do that I'm sure you guys would completely agree with is we try to create visual elements for things that are text heavy. So we have clients whose primary job is data, but data can be rendered in a lot of cool ways. So we've gotten into some pretty interesting products where we can illustrate very attractive, graphs and charts that are, again, mobile friendly. They work in a lot of environments. They can help people drill down. I'm a big fan of explainer videos. Those have been around a long time, and I know you guys have built your fair share of those kinds of things. But several of our shared clients, will take advantage of using animation or using explainer videos to try to walk people through what they offer in a way that requires less words. But another big intersection of all of that is ADA compliance. So anything that we is a graphic or that we lock in a video or animation has to be ADA compliant for a bunch of reasons. One, it's just the right thing to do these days to make sure that we're serving a diverse audience. But two, it's required for performance. So Google and requires it for performance reasons, and it certainly can negatively impact browser performance and search performance if someone chooses to ignore it. There's also been some litigation around it, some famous litigation that's been happening here and there. And we've seen some of our smaller clients get taken out by some things like that as well. So the requirement to be compliant and to serve a diverse audience is got that double whammy to it.
Yeah, that's good to know. I think that tying this back a little bit earlier, you mentioned Apple's kind of like white blank canvas on their site. And so if you're thinking about like a new client or a client that comes to you that has a new brand that they're trying to build and they're working on their website and they're seeing this blank canvas and they're not sure really what to put into it because it's like writer's block. It's like that creative, like I'm looking at just a blank screen and I don't know what to put in there. How do you kind of guide them through that process? And what are some common hurdles that come through that as you're trying to build with them?
Yeah. Well, certainly I've had clients come to me and show me the Apple website and say, like, we would like something like this. And then they have like a handful of iPhone photos that they've taken of like their thing. And I'm like, oh dear, like that's not going to do it.
Yes.
And so usually sometimes it's about like helping them understand what the actual investment in really amazing visuals looks like and then deciding if that's for them or not. And again, it's a broad spectrum of clients, but if their thing, for example, we have a country club that we work with and, their thing is the beauty of their property. That's the thing. That's their thing, So the beauty and the luxury and the perfectly kept grounds and, all that is the thing. So showing that, and in that case, there's not much of an argument from the client. There might just be a nudge from us on, how we want to package that up. So let's have so many videos at this width, at this size for these various landing pages. And so it might be more of a spec list from us. for a client, like say I have a very small client that like is in the septic business, and the thing he's most proud of is his truck, you know, which is cool. And, you know, but we're, you know, we're not going to get a photographer out there for the day to do, you know, shots of a septic pumping truck. So he could do a really great video on his iPad or whatever best device he has to capture the best video. And we have the capacity to like slow that down, maybe, you know, do a little bit of cropping, you know, and make sure that it fits real nice. And in that case, I don't mind the sort of homegrown feel of that big visual on his homepage of the truck sort of driving up to the house with the friendly face in it. Because even though it has a little, it doesn't have the slickness of like an Apple, you know, website, it doesn't matter. You know, he's one guy who owns a small business in a small town, and this is the vibe that we're going with. And so let's take that vibe all the way through to the visuals. And so someone might guess right away that that, you know, that that's what's happening when they look at it, but it's also okay because it's part of the philosophy of what he's selling. But what our job is to make sure that that video is not grainy or terrible, you know, so we need to make sure. And one of the things we guide clients through is to make sure that the videos and the photos speak appropriately to that vibe, you know, so if they need to be very, very glossy and very, very well lit, you know, and there needs to be a lot of composition around those images, like for the country club, for example, that would be a perfect example where we can't have an overflowing trash can in the corner. We can't have, you know, there can't be like the guy mowing the lawn. Like we can't have that, you know, it has to be staged. Everything has to be staged. But in the case of like the, like I said, with the septic guy, you know, that's okay, you know, and we still don't want a trash can in the corner, but you know, if his truck is not perfectly clean or if the lawn wasn't perfectly mowed when he rolled up the driveway, that's okay. So, so we sort of try to read it like that. We try not to overserve people. I find that in all areas of art, and I'm sure you guys experience this too, but if you get too high on your art, and you forget about the customer, you know, cause I am building it for them and for their purposes. And if I get too haughty about it, I'm not really serving. You know, I'm not, there's no compromise there. You know, it's not about me, you know, it's not about, you know, the parts of it that are about me or about Wild Apple or what we do are really like making sure that the page load times are amazing, making sure that the site never goes down, making sure they never get hacked, making sure it's, you know, that the navigational path for the client makes a ton of sense, you know, so that other people are like, oh, I like how that does that. You know, I like how the client is led to a quick explainer video and then led to a quick form that then creates a quick conversion, you know, into like a lead. And like, that's the kind of stuff that's up to me.
Right. You're mentioning a lot of like something that we kind of call at our studio, the sort of like thankless tasks, like the things that people don't necessarily see, but they feel through the process. And they don't necessarily know how the back end was done of that, but they like, in a way, that's a great thing because then they just had a great experience and there's no notes, which is lovely. And you're focused on the side that like, no one necessarily is thinking about, well, how is the security of this small business website that I'm about to go on and hire a service from? They're more about, oh, this experience was super easy to work through. I'd love to work with them again. Like
I want to acknowledge that. I'm sure you guys noticed if you jump on somebody's small business website and it says like not secure, like, you know, cause they haven't done their HTTPS or any of that, like you do notice. So we don't want any barrier between, you know, those two things, but also, so Eric Bellevue at Wild Apple, who's the other half of my equation here, is one of his great skills is helping customers understand how those technologies apply to exactly what you just said, Katie. So, you know, how does it make, you know, it's sort of that implicit, explicit stuff. You know, it's like some stuff is explicitly put in your face. This guy is in a septic truck that's going to roll up to your driveway and he's friendly and he's local. But then some stuff is implicit. Like, was this an easy experience? Did I even notice how easy it was? It was so easy, you know, but it just left me with a nice, warm, fuzzy feeling. And Eric helps leverage, you know, leverage that kind of thing for clients and mostly helps them manage their own websites too, because I think the other big part of what we do, back to Will's question about like how we walk people through this stuff, is we also have to make sure that it's sustainable, you know, so it's, if we build something amazing and it's amazing for a year, but then it starts to crumble because it's not very manageable for the client or there's other issues, you know, technology wise, there can be issues at the server level, issues at the platform level. So a big part of what we do is there. And that's where our implied value comes in, because it's not something you see us doing, but we're often behind the scenes, and particularly Eric. I say we. It's Eric. Eric behind the scenes. It's the royal we. But Eric makes sure that that kind of stuff, that our foundation is solid. And so 24 years in business, and people continue to refer. We also have quite a few clients who've returned time and time and time again for additional initiative websites. If they're large nonprofit agencies, they usually have a lot of offshoot or brand websites that might have other purposes, or clients that, again, just over time have evolved. So over 24 years, we've certainly been able to build, in some cases, two or three websites for the same company as they evolve and grow. And that's, to me, the most flattering thing that can happen, is when people just keep coming back, and they value that, and they trust our advice, and they value what we value, which is solid technology, great design, serving all your business purposes. You know, there it is. So,
yeah, that's awesome.
All right. So let's talk technology, because I think so new tech is definitely affecting our industry in various ways, some good, some bad, some ugly. And I guess I wanted to understand, I know the web has changed a lot since you started. Things like, it used to be Flash, then it was like HTML5, these are like animation specific, just because I know, you know, some of these.
Yeah, that was your world.
Those are things we've worked on.
Now, I think with, I don't know if you've tapped into Rive. Do you know Rive at all?
No.
Rive is like this new little tool. It's kind of funky. It's like a motion design tool for the web. So it's interactive elements that you can put on a website that are like animated. Yeah. And so I wanted to get a sense of what you're seeing. What kinds of changes have you seen over the years, technology-wise? And what do you think is on the horizon? Is AI affecting your work in any way? Like, I'm curious about that.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, we, back in the day, we would hard code things. You know, I mean, I say we, again, like, I really owe it to my amazing employees, and particularly Eric, to, you know, on this stuff, because I don't build the websites directly myself. But as a business owner, and as someone who's had to embrace this level of technology in order to be effective on all levels for clients, we used to hard code things. We used to have our own servers. You know, we used to have places where, you know, we would have to store quite a bit of information for clients, and all of that has really gone away over time. So the biggest swing has been going from those sort of managed environments where we were expected to provide these sorts of services, software service, et cetera, ourselves and create things, to platform-based stuff. So, you know, it's probably been about six, seven years now that we're completely embracing the platform approach. And so the platform that we build most of our websites on, or all of our websites on now, again, is a cloud-based API platform. It's housed in the Amazon web hosting environment. So everything is platform-based. And so we have an amazing team of engineers like behind us that then turn around and support us. And then we, as an agency, provide the service. And so what we're really expected to do, and what we are most comfortable doing, is making sure that we're providing the service. We don't want to spend a lot of time under the hood, you know, fixing stuff that's broken. That doesn't solve anybody's business problem. It doesn't sell more of whatever it is your thing is that you sell. And we don't enjoy it, you know, like fixing wiring and broken links and, you know, all kinds of other things that can break. Broken code is not enjoyable for anybody, and it doesn't, and it's very underappreciated, you know, by clients, because it's, again, it's kind of like, it's one of those things when you have to replace like your furnace at home. It costs a ton of money and you can't see it. It doesn't make any sense.
Exactly.
It's not more beautiful because I did this warm, but it's not more beautiful. So, you know, we all get excited when we spend money on something we can see that makes our life immediately better. So we have found that this approach helps keep, really the key phrase there is keep support low. So our environment is a low support environment. So we're not spending a lot of time fixing wiring or trying to get broken websites back up. And most of the time, we're able to just spend time on the client's goals and needs, and that's sort of this, you know, this is a big part of where the technology has gone. We definitely have to look at things like AI now, and we're already looking around in that space and figuring out how it serves us best. It's in that phase, as far as my world is concerned right now, we're in that phase where no one's really sure if it makes our world better or not, or if it's helpful or not, but we can't ignore it. And we'd be foolish to not look right at it and see what's happening. So we're, you know, Eric is already starting the process of vetting things and figuring out what it means It does seem that it's going to have some impact on performance as far as where AI pulls information from. So the best example I can come up with, like right at this moment, is, you know, if someone searches for, you know, animation agencies, you know, in Western Mass, you know, and they, where is that coming from? Like, what's the source of that listing, you know, of that information? You know, is it, it's not Google. So therein lies the rub. So as it applies to SEO, is what we're most curious about right now, but it also has, you know, applications in things like developing text. You know, all the sort of things that hang small business owners up, like developing content, like quickly and easily, you know, so I'm not for it or against it. I don't really have an opinion about it. It's not going away. So we'll figure out, you know, over time, and sure, it'll continue to evolve like everything else does.
Yeah,
that makes
sense. I've been seeing a lot of code writing from like ChatGPT or, you know, just AI in general. And I've used it for code writing. You know, some of our programs that we use are very intricate. They have sort of subsystems within them to write code, and it does not do a great job. It'll give you the thing that it thinks is correct, but there'll be a ton of errors, and then you have to kind of debug. So it's not like an amazing tool. I'm sure to write small snippets of code, it might be easy, and HTML and CSS might be a little bit easier too, but I don't know. It's just
a little like having like a bad subcontractor or a bad employee. It's like you can give it to them, but you still have to double check all of it, you know? And I'm like, well,
Yeah.
Might be a lot more time.
Like an intern that, you know, hasn't been fully trained yet or something.
Right. I don't know if that's saving me anything, but yeah. Right. So yeah, much the same.
That's interesting. So going back into this kind of motion aspect of things, like within the work you do, where do you find this sort of balance of applying animation or motion into a brand, into a design? Like, where is it best suited in the line of work that you're doing? Because I think there's so many different ways to apply different marketing techniques and where they're going to end up going.
Yeah.
So I'm just kind of curious where you see it being most used or maybe underused or anything of that nature.
Yeah. I mean, it's very like you, when you were talking about Rise earlier, you mentioned interactiveness, and that's definitely been a big part of where animation seems to fit in, even in the animations that are sort of platform-based or native, like in the platform that we use. So not necessarily even fancy animations, but even just like a small jiggle on hover or, you know, something where, you know, where there's a brighten and like a reduce, you know, sort of motion. We find that interactiveness is mostly where people are finding value in it, and mostly where they find, you know, with touch screens, you know, having something react to a touch is right. Not a new idea, but it's one of the most it continues to be one of the most valued ideas, like, or any kind of a shift or change in movement on hover, you know, so that people understand that there's an action to be taken. So that's at its most base level where it's very helpful. Where I find it's also incredibly helpful as it relates to branding is a lot of times people have a very complicated story behind a brand. And there's been quite a few times over the last, you know, 10 years or so that I have recommended people use animation to illustrate the story that came to be. Like it might be about ultimately their logo or their entire brand story. But I find that if clients have a really complex mission, if they're nonprofit and maybe their mission is complex or multi-tiered, that's a great way to sort of show that like inroads are coming into like this, you know, what ultimately might have been one static graphic, but what we serve or what we do is sort of illustrated in this way. And it's a great way, again, without a lot of words or without any words at all, oftentimes to serve a very quick picture of, you know, all the different areas of service or areas of impact that a business might have. It's also helped me, you know, tell a brand story. So if a logo itself is probably a little more complex than I might even like it to be in terms of all the different elements that are within it, one good way to help people sort of communicate that, you know, is through some logo motion, you know, some you know, motion coming in and explaining. I think we talked about this recently with the project that we just shared about, you know, like, you know, there's a lot behind there, you know, a great way to express that might be motion. I also think it lends itself really well to, you know, whatever the overall expression of the brand is, which could be something really cool. You know, if somebody was, you know, race cars or a racetrack or anything that shows like speed or motion or like, you know, something that like, or if it's, again, if it's meant to be slow or soft or, you know, we didn't get to do that with static logos back in the day. We, you know, we would have to show things like softness or speed or, luxuriousness or, you know, quietness, you know, those kinds of things aren't concepts that work well in a static graphic. But the opportunity to show them either through some minimal motion is great, or through more complex stories if there's an education that needs to be had with a brand about what they do, who they serve. And I don't see that going anywhere anytime soon as well. I think people are, even the small businesses have started to embrace, you know, animation. It used to be something only big guys did, but now getting in on it.
Yeah. Maybe my final question here might be like, you know, what do you wish like clients knew that maybe they don't know going into the process of working with you? Like, what are there aspects of your work that, you know, we have a lot of times, like there's a little bit of demystifying the process around animation and what that means and how it can be used strategically. Mm-hmm. Do you find that that also comes up for you, or do you find that it's a pretty straightforward process?
No, I mean, it's demystifying, distilling, translating, like these are all, you know, words that have been used in our industry for many years and they still apply. They're still fundamentals that we have to use. It's what we do, right? We help get that, whatever that client's goal is, and manage it through the process. And I think that, you know, probably what I'd like clients to know, or what is, you know, there's a lot of different places to buy these kinds of services. We've been fortunate enough to be in business for so long that almost everyone who comes to us is through a referral. And so we don't usually have to explain ourselves too much anymore, which is lovely. It's a gift, and thank you, you know. And so we're really grateful for that. So, but in the beginning, I felt very much like, you know, our philosophy of service, what we wanted to provide, you know, we're concierges into this world. We're going to help explain this to you. We're going to roll out the carpet and make sure you have a nice comfy walk on the way in, and that you don't feel alone at any point in time. Like, that's really kind of what you're paying for. Cause let's face it, like, you can get a website, like, let's just, like, you know, if you want to just throw a website in your cart and roll on down the aisle, and you don't care about all the stuff that comes wrapped around it, then there's a lot of different ways to acquire that. It's really commoditized in that way, you know, like you could Squarespace it or Wix it or GoDaddy it or whatever you want to do, or work with your nephew in his garage or whatever. But if you really value, you know, having someone be there to walk you through each process and help explain all the various technologies and how they plug in, and even what the different options are, that's really where I feel like, you know, sometimes a client will stumble into us that's been already led down that road by a previous client, which is always lovely. But if, you know, but if they just, if I just get the tire kicker phone call, if I just get the, like, how much is that, you know, whatever, we are already mismatched. Cause I'm going to tell you right now, it's probably going to be more expensive than you want it to be if you're asking that question.
That's true.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. That's a very good point.
Yeah. We love service. Like, we love being of service. We love relationships. Like, we love, like, having, you know, our clients are friends, you know, they invite us to their Christmas parties. You know, we just really cherish that. We love being part of the team. We love being helpful. The spirit of helpfulness is, you know, like, just one of our favorite things. But we are also a business, and we're here to make money, and we are in a lane. And, you know, so I think that mutual respect, you know, is like one of those things I often will say to clients, like, especially small businesses, it's like getting your hair done. Like, if you just walk into Great Cuts and plop down and, you know, and you want, like, you're probably not, that's not who, you know, we're not Great Cuts. You know what I mean? Like, if you want someone to guide, be like, what color would be best for my, oh, like, what do you think would frame my face nicely? Or what do you think would, you know, like, you know, how, what goes best with my personality and, you know, and whatever, like, those are the kinds of, you know, it's a much more bespoke experience using products that we didn't necessarily create on our own. So, but what we've brought to the table is that guidance, you know, and leading people through the best decision for them long term, and applying our experience to that. So, yeah.
I think that's where we align a lot in terms of what we're doing. And I think that's why, like, every time we work together, I'm like, oh, it's so, like, I love your process. Mm-hmm. I love your process so much. So,
Now, did you bring up the hair?
I think it's a testament to all the work.
Did you bring
do.
Up the hair because I need a haircut? Is that why? Because
your hair looks amazing. Your curls
so
are really coming
long.
In.
It's so long. I've never had hair this long. It's so bad. I need to do something.
That's funny. Well, you know not to go to Great Clips. Yeah, there you go.
Don't do it, man. Right. Yeah. Let's say that for our great people who probably work there, everyone gets started. But still, yeah, it's a very different experience. And people have to be willing to pay for the experience and the relationship, you know, versus, you know, just, you know, spinning out a website on Squarespace or Wix, which is also great. You know, I don't begrudge anyone who chooses that path for financial reasons.
Right.
There's a lot of great ways to use those products, but But that's who we are. And, you know, we all have our little need to make our way in the world. And that's how we're doing it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, so how can people reach out to you? Like if someone listens to this podcast and they're like, oh, I need a new website. Like, where can they go? How can they find you? How can they reach out?
Yeah. So wildappledesigngroup.com has all of our contact info and a little form that we do pay attention to daily. And so people can reach out in that way. They can find me personally on LinkedIn, Amy Scott, and then any other Google search, et cetera, in the Springfield, Massachusetts area. We are there. So we're not hard to find. And I'm always delighted to talk through various projects with people and see if we can come up with a love match. Yeah.
That's awesome. I would say that I have a feeling that, you know, for years we have been talking about getting a new website. Yeah, and so you might see someone come through your form sooner than you might think.
Right. Yeah. Same here. It's the mechanic's car, right? Like, you know, we rebuild ours, you know, like from time to time. But even as soon as we finish it, we're already like, ah, oh, geez, like, you know, we want to do, you know, we have other ideas and it's hard sometimes to pop in, but it just helps with the overall experience of, we know what our clients go through.
It's a little bit more required too. It's like, I think you were talking a little earlier, and maybe we'll slot this in a little earlier, but you were talking about update. Like, it's more of a consistent update now. It's not just because things are changing so fast and you have a little bit more room to like analyze and figure out like, is it working? I think there's more of a like turnaround on websites as well. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And we're also finding like on the topic of AI, like, we're not, jury is still out on a lot of things, but there was sort of a period of time there where people were like, do I need really need a website? Can I just use social media? Can I just, park some information? Like people were starting to question like the validity of websites in general and particularly when like the Internet of Things started happening. So that whole idea of being able to like, use those sorts of ideas of smart technologies, people really started to question. But there's kind of like a little sneaking suspicion that this whole thing with AI creating a whole other method of search in terms of how people find their way to a business, that may actually increase the importance of websites again. Not that they're not currently important, but, you know, I think that if we were ever to ask ourselves, like, will this ever not be a thing? You know, like it's I can't in the foreseeable future. It's it doesn't seem to be going anywhere, and it maybe even is going to, experience a little, revival in importance very soon. So,
a renaissance of sorts,
A renaissance of sorts, yes. Awesome.
Well,
yes, of course.
Thank you so much, Amy, for joining us. This was so lovely to hear you speak about the stuff that you've been working on. It's so good to have you. So
yeah, I feel like we could have had a whole other like a second episode that just talks about managing business and like you, because we've talked before about having like some kind of local creative mastermind to get together and just like share what's going on. And I maybe this is the renaissance of bringing that back. Maybe it's going to happen. So
things find their way. Yeah, that's true. And I've had that conversation with other like-minded people. And, it's true that we like to find clients that we enjoy working with, but I also really, really enjoy working with folks like yourselves and people that have a similar philosophy. And, we just want to do good work and be nice people and,
Yes.
Yeah, that's it.
That's it. Yeah. Well, thank you. Yes. Thank you so much for being on. We really appreciate it. And we look forward to part two in the future.
Yeah. Thanks for inviting me. I'll see you guys soon.
Yeah.
A big thank you as always to eMedia for producing this podcast. Our producer is Jackson Foote. Our music is created by Hidden and licensed through premiumbeat.com. And as always,
stay honest,
stay creative,
stay open.
Open Pixel Studios. Thanks. We'll see you in the next episode.